Welcome to the DL.
It's 10:23 in the East, which means I have no clue what time it is in your part of the world because this isn't live. It's just me today, and I wasn't even going to do a show. And the reason the show is up so late is because I was in New York City yesterday. So this is let me take you through a little bit of the day. I was up there for the Free Darko book party slash, it wasn't a reading, it was more of a roundtable discussion, so I want to get into a little bit of that. I tweeted some things out yesterday. A little side note, I saw Don from HHR from Blogs with Balls. He helped put on the event yesterday in New York City. And the first thing he says, hey, I was trying to listen to yesterday's show, or today, you know, at the time, yesterday's show, and you spent like 8 minutes talking about your knee, and then I got bored, so I just turned it off. So with that, the knee is still painful. I had to walk like 2 miles over the course of the day and up steps, and I think I just need a new leg. So if anyone knows how to get a new leg, DL it on the DLpodcast.com. That being said, the trip to New York was cool, and it's one of those things. It takes like 2 hours. It seems so close because I used to live in New Brunswick, but it takes like 2 hours to get to New York City. So you sit on a train, you drive up to the train station, which is a half an hour from where I live. You get on the train, you take the double-decker trains and whatever. So I read the Free Darko book on the way up, or parts of it, and I'll get into that in a second. And then you get to the city, cabs, blah, blah, blah. The bookstore was awesome. And it was Hanukkah. I mean, I wish it was tonight. I wouldn't be able to go, but it is the first night of Hanukkah. There are so many Jews in this room. It is mind-boggling, and it makes me wonder, and I grew up in sort of a baseball construct. My dad had family. My dad's from Philly and was a big Connie Mack Stadium, Scheib Park guy growing up, and he had some distant cousins who lived in Brooklyn, and Brooklyn was a baseball area. So I always grew up with the mindset that the Jewish game was baseball, which is how I always thought. Not that there were a lot of Jewish players, but that the game itself, from a fan standpoint, the Jewish people sort of migrated towards that over all other sports. Now, I could be wrong, but that's just the way I grew up. But it turns out that all the Jews are in basketball. You should have seen this place yesterday. There might have been per capita, it was like 6-1 hipster Jews. Scholes, everybody. I think there's one non-Jew in the whole Free Darko cabal. So anyway, Will Leach was the moderator, and I thought Will did a very good job. I was going to tape it. I had my recorder. I had planned on taping it. I had planned on actually trying to get some interviews done afterwards, and then it took a long time to walk to this place, and the party, which was sponsored by Captain Morgan, was loud. I didn't want to pull people out and do interviews on the street because it was, you know, loud and whatnot. So we're going to set some interviews up. Lang Whitaker from Slam Magazine, I think, is going to come on hopefully this week. And soon there were some other people there. Matt Ufford was there. He was on a couple weeks ago, and Shanoff was there, and AJ Delario was there. Tommy Craggs, I finally got to meet. So it was good to meet some of the people. I'm sure I'm forgetting names that I shouldn't be right now. But I wasn't able to tape anything. So that's why you're hearing my voice right now. But going back to the conversation at the bookstore, Leach was the moderator. And I thought Will did a very good job of trying to incorporate everyone, or at least almost everyone, because I might be the only one, but when you think of Free Darko, and maybe it's because Scholes controls the Twitter most times, but you think of Scholes. You think of a group of people centered around him, and that's sort of what happened last night. Scholes was in the middle of the table. He dominated the conversation, as he normally does when he's on this show. It was very similar to his appearance last week, except far less angry, I think, because he realized he was aware that there were 100-something people in front of him. When you're on the show, you just think that there's one person there. But anyway, the other people, I was amazed, and Will brought this up. They had never even met. Some of the people had never even met. Nick mentioned on the show for us, I think yesterday or the day before, that he and I only see each other 2 times a year. It's probably more than that. It's probably 3 or 4 times a year, but it's not once a week. It's not once a day like some people who, quote-unquote, work together. These writers put together Free Darko. A lot of them are grad students. A lot of them are freaking geniuses. They put together a site like Free Darko through message boards, through the internet, through chat room. This is the KSK model too. A lot of those guys don't live anywhere near each other. Now the KSK guys, many of them live in the DC area, so I know they see each other a lot. But you know, a guy like Matt Ufford, he lives in Brooklyn. He probably does not see the KSK guys that much at all. But this was the first time that some of the guys who write for Free Darko had ever met in person. It's amazing. It's just so cool that we can exist in a world where you can be a coworker, where you can write a book with someone who you've never met in person. And to that point, I walked up to Will Each, and he looked at me and said, "Hey, how's it going?" And I said, "You don't know who I am." And I sort of embarrassed him and put him on the spot. I didn't mean to do that, but he's like, "No, I think I do. I think I do." I was like, "No, we've never met." I had never met Will Each. And when I told him who I was, he's like, "Oh my God, you look totally different than I thought. You look older," I think he said, "than I thought," which I think is the haircut, because all the pictures online, I have longer hair. So I've talked to Will probably 50 times in my life, whether it be on the show or off the show or email and whatnot, all the time. We had never been in the same room, ever. And we tried to remember if there was a time that maybe we had never been in the same room. So even that alone is just sort of neat in a weird internet construct. And it's fun to be tactile every once in a while with people who you only know in a digital sense. And that was what yesterday was about for me. That's why I wanted to go up. Obviously, I wanted to get people interested in well, I don't want to say interested in our party, but I want to remind people that we're having a party as well. I want to shake some hands. And I wanted to be there for Scholes and for the other people who had this book, because Eric Freeman was there. And Eric and I talked every day when we were both at Sporting News and commiserated when we weren't at Sporting News anymore. And I had never met Eric. He lives in San Francisco. We had never met. So for that, but also obviously to keep my face relevant and say, "Hey, we have 500 shows. Somebody come listen to us." So the interesting thing, and I won't take too much more time. This is going to be a very short show. I think the most interesting part of, if you haven't gotten the new book, first of all, go back if you haven't listened to the interview with Scholes from, I want to say, Tuesday of last week, before Thanksgiving. So I want to say it was Tuesday. But if you haven't gotten the new book, it's not a basketball, it's a history of the sport of basketball, but it's written in such a way that it's more about the cultural significance. It takes nuggets. It's not here's 50 years of a sport. It's here's what we felt is important to discuss within those 50 years. They have a section, and they talked about it at length yesterday. And actually, Lang Whitaker told me that Slam picked it up and they put it in the magazine. It's a history of all of the fights in NBA history. And it's like this beautiful graphic of like which guys have gotten in which fights with which players and how they associate with other players. And the bigger the circle, the more fights they've gotten. It's just wonderfully done. And it's something that you wouldn't necessarily think to do. And it's an important part. And we actually spent half the, I think, conversation yesterday talking about fights. It's an important part of the history of basketball. And it brought up the Andre Johnson thing from the other day. Andre Johnson threw haymakers at Courtland Finnegan's head in the Tennessee-Houston game. And obviously that's somewhat of a rivalry. And Courtland Finnegan, I guess, claims to be the dirtiest player in the league, or wants to be. So he was trying to get under Andre Johnson's skin. Haymakers at him. Neither player suspended. They were both fined, I believe, $25,000. There's conspiracy theories all around Philadelphia this week that Andre Johnson wasn't suspended because the Texans are playing the Eagles on Thursday night, and the NFL wasn't going to suspend the Texans' best player for their national televised game on the NFL's network. I don't subscribe to that theory, but it's out there. It's actually pretty sound. I don't think that's what it is. I think the NFL smartly said they took care of it themselves. This wasn't a heinous injury. This wasn't a helmet-to-helmet hit that they're trying to legislate out of the league. This was two guys. One guy was frustrated, and he beat the crap out of the other guy for a couple seconds. I mean, I think you find them, you say, don't do it again. Obviously, if either of them do it again, they'll be suspended. But it was brought up yesterday in a basketball context, because if that happened in the NBA, Andre Johnson would be suspended for 20 games. Now, it's different in the NFL, because the NFL is only 16 games, and the NBA is 82. But they brought up the Carmelo Anthony thing from when Carmelo, I believe it was against the Knicks. I want to say it was Nate Robinson and Carmelo, but I'm not 100% sure. But they were making fun of the terrible punch that Carmelo Anthony threw, and then sort of, hold me back, hold me back, hold me back. I got suspended for 20 games for that. And it was brought up in the idea of David Stern and how he leads and the perception of the league. And Scholes brought up the racism factor, and it's clearly a factor. I mean, it got sort of this weird applause, which embarrassed him, and I think everybody else there to some extent. But it's like we're afraid to admit that people are racist, and that's why the NBA has a negative connotation. As he said, it's black guys in shorts expressing themselves, and that scares people. And when they start fighting, that needs to be contained because, oh my God, it could spill into the crowd, which it has before, and that was brought up as well. It's different, I guess, on the football field because we expect some sort of warrior mentality from these players. They're nowhere near the fans. They're very, very distant. Obviously, not just the fact that the field is bigger, but the fact that the fans are set further back in football than in basketball. So the parallels were brought up that Andre Johnson didn't even get suspended at all. He got fined. Now, if you had that same fight in hockey, the guy would get 5 minutes and come back on the ice. So it depends on the sport, but basketball has put this hammer down. David Stern put this hammer down in after the Auburn Hills thing, you know, with the Ron Artest situation and everything where they went into the crowd. Every fight from that point forward was, we have to get this out of the game. But what they do in the book, and they do a great job of this, and they talked about it last night, the league, the NBA, and even the precursors to the NBA, the NBL and the ABL, they started almost as fighting leagues. They had cages around the court to keep the balls in, but that enabled players to actually throw their opponents into the cages. At one point early in the book, they talk about how one of the players commented that you could play tic-tac-toe on their backs because they got thrown into the cages so much. And even in the early days of the NBA, and even into the 60s and 70s of the NBA, it was a far rougher game, or more rough game, than it is now. There were far more fights. There was far more rough play than there is now. It's just that we put this perception now. It's a PR spin. And I don't know if that's necessarily a good thing for the game. You don't want people going out there fighting each other. But you do wonder if perception has gotten in the way of play. And Scholes, and I'll end on this part about this, but Scholes brought up a very good point of the term playoff basketball and how playoff basketball is thought of as a good thing. It's thought of as something that means it's hard fought. You care more. You're more into it. You're more aggressive because it's a must-win situation. Yet if a guy gets in a fight in game 15 of an 82-game season, he's thought of as a maniac. Oh my God, he can't control his emotions. If that same thing happened in the playoffs, people would laud him for caring so much and having so much on the line. But if a guy cares that much during the regular season when players habitually don't, he'd be looked at as a monster. And I think that's an interesting point. And I actually agree with that. It's unfortunate that if you play hard and that leads to sometimes aggressions boiling over, you're looked at as some sort of monster who needs to be suspended and kicked out of the game and potentially, oh, kick him out of the league. I mean, you've heard stuff like that before. Guys need to be taken out, suspended for a year. It's ridiculous. They're athletes. They're aggressive. They have humongous bodies and muscles. Every once in a while, they're going to want to punch each other. And it was an interesting conversation yesterday. I do think, like I said, it has to go back to some of the racial issues. And you'd like to think that some of that is dissipating. I don't know. I don't know if it is, and I don't think it is. And anyway, so that's part of what they talked about yesterday. I thought all the guys were extremely nice, as nerdy and awkward as they all are, and it is hilarious. It is, like I said, it is like hipster Hanukkah last night. It was just fantastic. And, you'll see the picture if you go to press coverage. I mean, you just see those guys, and it's great. And I thought Leach did a good job for being not really a basketball guy. I think he found himself, and we talked about this afterwards, he found himself asking a question and saying, well, why don't you just talk about it? Because you almost can't ask leading questions to people who wrote these stories. Just, you want to ask them a specific question, but they wrote the story, so just say, hey, can you talk about the story you wrote? And it's the best you can do. And I thought Will did a very good job of getting everyone involved and getting that done. I don't think I ever would have been able to do that, which, again, leads to the last point, and that's why I've monopolized 14 minutes of your day. It is impossible, egomaniacally impossible for me, who has done, 484 of these talks with other people most times and a few times by myself, to sit in front of eight people who have microphones talking about sports and not be able to talk back. It was, I told Leach, I almost started to text him, hey, can you ask them this? And they had questions at the end, and I wanted to ask a question because Greg Wyshynski was on a couple weeks ago and talked about how hockey is on an uptick and basketball seems to be on a downward, you know, with this whole anti-LeBron thing. I actually disagree, and hockey might be on an uptick, but I actually think basketball hasn't been more popular than it is right now in maybe the last 15 years. And I might be wrong on that, but whether you like LeBron or not, I don't think basketball has been more popular than, I think, I don't want to say than ever, but at least since Jordan left the first time. Our second time, when Jordan left Chicago, I don't think basketball has been as popular as it is right now in the public consciousness. And I don't know if it's for all the right reasons, but it's, I think it's getting there. And I think, so I disagree with Wyshynski, and I wanted to ask him about that, but I didn't want to hijack the whole thing and turn it into a sort of anti-hockey conversation. They did talk a lot about parity in football and parity in basketball and how there are only a few teams who can win every year, and whether or not that's a good thing in basketball, that when you get to the season, there's basically 75% of the league that cannot win the championship. And it's very unlike football and to some extent unlike baseball. But I wish they would have brought up soccer, and I don't know if any of them know enough about soccer, and I should have raised my hand and brought it up, but there was a limited amount of time, and other people were there and, you know, spent their time to get there too to ask questions, and I figured I could talk to them later. I could just bring it up on the show here. But I think that if you look at, say, the Premier League soccer or even La Liga, if you look at, we talked about the Real Madrid-Barcelona match the other day, those are really the only two teams that have a chance to win that league. I mean, there's Valencia and there's a couple other teams that are pretty good that could challenge. If you look at the English Premier League, there's Chelsea, there's Manchester United, there's, what, Arsenal, you know, there's a couple other teams that are up there. Man City now has made a run because they've bought up everyone in the world the last few years. But usually there are five teams. Liverpool every once in a while. There are four or five teams who are the marquee teams. And then there are some of the other teams who are fighting for relevance, who might get into the Champions League, who might get into the FA Cup, you know, some of the other cups and whatnot. But then you have the dregs, and you have, I mean, I looked at the attendance last weekend, and Manchester United had 77,000 people at their home match over the weekend, and I don't think it was West Ham. I forget the team, one of the lower teams in the Premier League, and I apologize for not remembering which team it was, had 25,000 people. And it was a sellout. That's just how big their stadium is. So you talk about the disparity in the highest level of soccer. It's very similar to the NBA, and I should have either brought that up or I wish that somebody else had brought that up, because I think that's a great parallel for mitigating your expectations of what can happen. And they brought up Kevin Durant and how Durant may never win a championship because of the era in which he's in and because he's on a team that may never get good enough. I mean, now they could win one or two. Does that lessen his legacy? Does that make him, you know, can he ever become one of the greats of the game if he doesn't win a title? And, you know, obviously the contract, Charles Barkley and, you know, guys like Karl Malone, John Stockton, whatnot come up as well. I don't know the answer to that. I don't think I know enough about the history of basketball to know that, but I think in a way, from a year to year standpoint, the fans can have small victories. Durant might win an MVP. That would be great. They might get to the playoffs. They might become a four seed. They might knock off a one seed. Will they ever win a title? They might get to the final. The Sixers got to the finals one time with Iverson. They won the first game. It's almost as if they won the championship against the Lakers because no one expected them to beat the Lakers, and they never got back. And from what I recall, they never really got even that close after that. I mean, they might have gotten to a couple Eastern Conference finals, but they didn't get back to the finals. They clearly never got close enough to win another title. It wasn't good enough in Philly, but we sort of understood based on who was on our team that that was as far as that team was ever going to go. And that's, I think, why we love Iverson. Because he took that team further than anyone ever expected them to be able to go. You can do that in the NBA. And I think in some extent you can do that in baseball, but you can't do that in the NFL. You have to win, and you have to win the playoffs, and you have to win a Super Bowl. But I don't think that's like that in the English Premier League. You root for who you root for. People who are, you know, fans of the Wolves, or people who are fans of even a team like Tottenham, I mean, you're not going to win every year. And you might get there once in a while, but you know, Everton is a good, you're going to be in the middle of the pack, and you want to do well, and you want to maybe get to the Champions League every once in a while, but you don't think you're going to win when you go into the season. And it's just sort of win the battles you can win, win a game here and there, and there becomes rivalries, and there become, you know, win these important games. And I think you can do that in the NBA as well. And I think that's a lot of the conversation yesterday. Maybe that's different than some of the other sports. You literally know going in your team can't win. You win the battles you can win. And with that, there's my 15 minutes. 19 minutes. Thank you for your time. Deal it on the DLPodcast.com. It was a great time. I am glad that I went. It was difficult for me to walk and take the train, and steps are just freaking impossible right now. But I am very, very happy that I went. And I thank everyone for being as cordial and hospitable. Captain Morgan sponsored the after party. They are one of the sponsors of our party, so it would be remiss of me not to mention that. The captain was there hanging out, taking pictures of people. We had free drinks and whatnot. It was a really cool time. I thank the guys with Blogs with Balls for setting this up. They do great work. And I always talk about community building. I ain't got nothing on them. I mean, they build more community than me ever, and they do a great job. So I thank them. I thank all of you. Presscoverage.us is the website. We'll talk to everybody tomorrow.